I'm Ted Koppel. Welcome to a celebration of citizenship. Over the last 10 years, Americans have been doing a lot of celebrating. We've had national parties for the Declaration of Independence and the Statue of Liberty, as well as for the Olympic Games. But today, here in Washington, there are no tall ships on the Potomac, no massive displays of flags, no spectacular fireworks, and for a good reason. The men and women and boys and girls gathered here and in homes, factories, offices, and classrooms across the nation have assembled not merely to celebrate the Constitution. They've come to start something, to begin a national effort that requires dedication as well as celebration. On this day, 200 years ago, the ink on the Constitution was still wet, and there was considerable doubt that the Constitution would ever be approved by the then imperfect Union of States. Every word, every phrase, every sentence of every paragraph was examined by the delegates as if their lives depended on it, because their lives did depend on it. And that's as true now as it was then. But for 200 years, it has worked so well that most of us now take it for granted. And that's what this celebration of citizenship is all about. We're here today not simply to honor the Constitution, but to renew our understanding and appreciation of it. I am honored to introduce your mistress of ceremonies, Dr. Floretta McKenzie. Dr. McKenzie.
Thank you, Ted. And welcome again, everybody. This is a star-spangled celebration. But this time, the fireworks are not on the outside. They are inside the Constitution. The Constitution doesn't make a gift of liberty. It assumes that we, the people, were meant to be free and are determined to remain free, and that we accept the responsibilities that freedom demands. Miss Alison Porter and the United States Army Band.
In case you're wondering, she's 5 years old, Alison Porter, born in Worcester, Massachusetts, 5 times the junior vocalist champion on Star Search, that popular television talent series of today. President likes her.
In 1776, the Declaration of Independence spelled out how we, the people, insisted on liberty. 11 years later, in 1787, the Constitution spelled out how we were going to guarantee that liberty. The words may be 200 years old, but they still ring as loudly and as truly as they did then. I have the honor to present the chairman of the Commission on the Bicentennial of the United States Constitution, and Chief Justice of the United States from 1969 to 1986, Warren E. Burger.
Justice Burger resigned from the Supreme Court. He said to devote his time to this bicentennial celebration. He has an absolute fascination with it and has devoted enormous energy to it.
President, Senator Byrd, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chief Justice, 200 years ago today, and for a good many years before that, our 13 states were in turmoil. There was almost no domestic tranquility. There were conflicts between the states over commercial matters. There were conflicts between the states over boundaries. Virginia and Maryland, right near where we are today, had a serious quarrel over boundaries and navigation on the Chesapeake Bay and on the Potomac River. There had been a rebellion in Massachusetts that history knows as Shays' Rebellion, and it was put down by troops of the Massachusetts military. What happened after we won the revolution is what has happened to every victorious alliance in world history. The victorious allies began to fall out. George Washington, in retirement down at Mount Vernon, despaired over the idea of Americans in conflict with other Americans. Washington, Madison, Hamilton, Franklin, and others were sure that we could never prosper and that we could never have security, real security, without a new form of government that would be stronger than the government that was provided by the Articles of Confederation. Here is what they did about it. And I will read to you what they wrote in the preamble of the Constitution, and I am reading from the official pocket-sized copy, the Bicentennial Commission's official copy. Here's what they said. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. This, fellow Americans, is what we celebrate today.
Former Chief Justice Warren Burger, who, as we said, has devoted his time and his energy to, in large measure, inspiring the extent to which this has been such a vigorous and national celebration. As we wait for the president, we'll be back in just a moment.
This ABC, keeping us a free nation, a free people, it guarantees every American the opportunity to succeed.
The celebration on Capitol Hill continues. Let's go right back there.
Celebrates the defense of freedom. The Constitution guarantees that freedom. The guarantees is equal justice under the law. We the people define what laws were needed and who would make them in Article 1 of the Constitution. All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I present from West Virginia the Majority Leader of the United States Senate, Senator Robert C. Byrd.
Born in North Carolina, former meat cutter, a former welder, ran for politics first in 1946.
Mr. President, my fellow Americans, there is a tendency to think that the Constitution is really just something we read about in our history books. But the Constitution is not a hollowed out, dry piece of history. It is for the here and now, for Americans in 1987, for you, the outstanding students here and throughout America in the schoolrooms. It allows us to argue, to be different, to tell people what we think, to vote, ultimately to carry forward the American dream. At the time the Constitution was written, the idea of a strong central government was not popular. The states did not want to give up their powers. Many people wanted to protect their individual rights. The arguments in Philadelphia went on for months. Finally, there was a compromise. Power would be divided and shared. The president, the Congress, and the judiciary would be separate but equal to check and balance each other. At a time when every country seemed to have a king, this was very different. We take it for granted that the president and the Congress share the power. But even today, we must check and balance each other. From our experience, we know that when one branch of the government gets too much power, usually America gets hurt as a result. Even the Congress is divided. Every state has two senators, but big states have more members in the House of Representatives than do the states with smaller population. It is a compromise that works. And this is what we do in the Congress. We compromise. We look for positive solutions that work for all Americans. Above all, the Constitution is a document of political expansion and liberty, an umbrella of rights protecting all Americans. It is a document not just for the privileged, but also for the little guy as well. The Constitution is very much alive today. It lives for you and for me, and if we keep it safe, for generations to come.
Thank you, Senator Byrd. The creation of both a House and a Senate is another example of the checks and balances built into the Constitution. The men who wrote the Constitution understood the importance of making laws, and they knew that making laws was not an easy task. From Texas, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Representative Jim Wright.
From Fort Worth, Texas, in fact, where he was born, one of only 15 people to serve as Speaker of the House in this century.
Madam Chairman, for 200 years we have been blessed by this Constitution. Because other generations nurtured and preserved it, we have more freedom and more abundance. America's not just a piece of land. We're not a special race of people. America is a set of ideas and ideals. We're a family held together not by blood, but by belief. We believe, first of all, that every individual has worth. Each of us is entitled to have his say. No one of us is entitled to get his way. We believe that each of us has obligations. Here, nobody may be above the law. Most of all, those who govern us have a special duty to respect and obey the law. In America, they're our servants, not our masters. Finally, the Constitution speaks of posterity. We believe that each generation should do better than the one before. Heirs of this legacy, let us resolve that we shall expand the reach of liberty and justice in our time, to embrace those Americans even now denied the reality of its promise. Let us resolve that we shall preserve its benefits intact for future generations and honor its spirit in our lives by truly respecting the rights of those even with whom we disagree, and so conduct ourselves that 200 years from now, the protections of the Constitution may still endure to bless the generations yet to come.
the Speaker of the House, Jim Wright, from Texas. And as we take a look at the west side of the Capitol and at the USS Constitution in Boston, a reminder that most people probably don't realize that two-thirds of the world's constitutions have been adopted since 1970. This one is 200 years old. We'll be back in just a moment.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we join Commissioner McKenzie as she introduces the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, Chief Justice Rehnquist, and she reminds us that it forms the third branch of government under the Constitution.
Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the framers of our Constitution wanted to make sure that the government they established was very different from that which they as colonists had experienced under King George III of England. They hit upon the idea of separating the powers of government into legislative, executive, and judicial, and assigning each of those powers to a separate branch of the newly created federal government. Each of those branches is represented here today. The Congress has the power to make laws, the President has the power to carry out the laws, and the Supreme Court and other courts have the power to decide cases arising under those laws. The reason that the framers did this was their desire that these three separate branches would check and balance one another, and thus prevent the government from becoming too powerful. Under this kind of system, it sometimes takes longer for the government to do something, because Congress and the President may not agree with one another, or because the courts may decide that a law is unconstitutional. But this very sort of friction is itself a guarantee against arbitrary or ill-considered actions by the government. Separation of powers is as important now as it was 200 years ago.
Thank you, Chief Justice Rehnquist. The Constitution, as originally written, was, as Benjamin Franklin said, not a perfect document, but through the amendment process, it is subject to improvement. Every new generation inherits the Constitution as a part of their heritage. I believe it's in good hands. Ladies and gentlemen, I am honored to introduce two representatives of the future of America, 17-year-old honor student Damian Atkins and the winner of the 1987 National Spelling Bee, 14-year-old Stephanie Pettit. And now, Stephanie Pettit.
200 years ago, it would have taken her about a week to get here from her home in Pittsburgh.
For 200 years now, the Constitution has safeguarded our rights. It stands behind every American tradition and culture. This is especially important to young people, because we are the future, and America is counting on us to preserve it. Because both my parents were born and raised outside this country, they have taught me to appreciate and to cherish the greatness of America. Many facts taught in school are soon forgotten after the final exam is over. But the Constitution, unlike many concepts gained through school, needs no final exam, for the American youth continue to live it every day as American citizens in all walks of life. The bicentennial of the Constitution is calling much well-deserved attention to the document. However, this attention should not end with the celebration, because our work to build the future has just begun. I am very honored to be here to share my thoughts with you and to remind all of us how great the country is that we live in. In 1971, 2 years before I was born, the 26th Amendment to the Constitution became law. That's the amendment that says you have to be only 18 years old to vote. So I've got 4 years to wait. But Damian Atkins, our next speaker, is 17, and he'll be able to vote next year. I don't know who he's going to vote for, but I do know that his vote will make a difference. Damian?
Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you, everybody. The most important thing I have to say today is that if you're old enough to vote and you don't, the guarantees of the Constitution are empty promises. The Constitution doesn't work just because of the words. It works because we believe it. It works because we make it work. And we make it work by caring, by voting, and by proving over and over again that the real power of the Constitution is us, we the people. Since Article 2 of the Constitution was written, there have been 40 presidents. It is a privilege for me to introduce the 40th president of the United States.
I didn't realize you'd introduced me.
Thank you.
Very much the kind of situation that President Reagan enjoys, in fact, almost revels in.
When George Washington was elected as the first president of the United States, the total population of the country was nearly 4 million. Today, there are over 5 million federal employees. Times have changed. But the basic premise of the Constitution hasn't changed. It's still our blueprint for freedom. One of our more able statesmen and constitutional lawyers, Daniel Webster, once wrote, "We may be tossed upon an ocean where we can see no land, nor perhaps the sun or stars, but there is a chart and a compass for us to study, to consult, and obey. The chart is the Constitution." 200 years ago, the very notion of free self-government was a new idea. But James Madison, a man who many call the father of the Constitution, urged his fellow citizens not to oppose the idea simply because it was new. He argued that it was the glory of the American people, that they were not blindly bound to the past, but were willing to rely on their own good sense and experience in charting the future. It's interesting that Madison and others had to defend the Constitution because it was new. Times have changed. For over 200 years, we've lived with freedom under law, and perhaps we've become complacent about it. We should never forget how rare and precious freedom is. Active and informed citizens are vital to the effective functioning of our constitutional system. All of us have an obligation to study the Constitution and participate actively in the system of self-government that it establishes. This is an obligation we owe not only to ourselves, but to our children and their children. And there is no better time than right now, during the next 4 years of the bicentennial, to rededicate ourselves to the Constitution's and values it contains. Let us never forget that the signers of the Declaration of Independence acted with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. 100 years ago, on the occasion of the centennial of the Constitution, another president, Grover Cleveland, accepted the privilege that I have been given here today to honor the Constitution. And his words are as true now as they were then. He said, "When we look down upon 100 years and see the origin of our Constitution, when we contemplate all its trials and triumphs, when we realize how completely the principles upon which it is based have met every national need and national peril, how devoutly should we say with Franklin, 'God governs in the affairs of men.'" And now, Stephanie, Damien, Brian, Thais, would you join me and everybody here and everybody watching and listening throughout the land as we recite the words that we all know by heart, the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Stock Exchange in New York City.
As I said earlier, the ceremony here today wasn't meant to.
And on Capitol Hill again, Ted Koppel.
A national reaffirmation of the Constitution that will go on for the next 4 years. It's a far-reaching plan, what former Chief Justice Berger calls a national history and civics lesson for all of us. But what it really is, I think, is an invitation to all of us to get involved. As young Damian Atkins said earlier, the Constitution doesn't work because of the words. It works because we have made it work.
Over and over today, in one way or another, we've been asked to get involved. But how can we begin? What can we do right now? You would think there would be an easy answer to those questions. There isn't. Each of us must find an answer. Of course we should read the Constitution. Of course we should vote in every election. But what else? We the people must ask ourselves, how can we improve our homes, our work, our schools, our communities, and our neighborhoods? And then do something about it. In short, get involved, volunteer. The people who wrote the Constitution did, and look what they accomplished.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Wayne Newton and join him and the 300 voice choir from 13 Washington area choral groups in singing God Bless America.
God bless America, land that I roam. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans, white with foam.
As 50,000 red, white, and blue balloons make their way into the skies over Capitol Hill, a reminder to those of you across the country that you have once again had an opportunity to participate in something pretty historic. For those of you particularly in schools all across the country, as you go home today, as you come to school tomorrow, look around you. Think and talk to one another. That's at all sorts of places you can find the Constitution at work. One brief program reminder, ABC News will present a three-hour program on the United States Constitution, The Blessings of Liberty, beginning at 8 o'clock Eastern Time tonight. Until then, I'm Peter Jennings. That's the nation's capital. That's the president. Good afternoon.